Now, though we are turning to Isaiah 34 and 35, I hope you will bear with me a moment while we look at some verses by way of introduction from Romans chapter 8. And we began to read at verse 18, a verse that resonates with us all. Paul says, I calculate, I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. Well, I'm sure all of us in trouble, difficulty, pain, sorrow, whatever, are glad that the things that we go through now will be outshone by far by the things of glory, and that we will forget these things because of the excellency of the time when we shall be with the Lord in glory. Now, verse 19, interestingly, begins with the word for, and therefore it indicates a deduction from what has been said. I reckon that the sufferings of this present time, that itself follows from verse 17, are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creature waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God. Do you see that in verse 19 you have the word creature, and in verse 20 you have the word creature, and in verse 21 you have the word creature, and in verse 22 you have the word creation, and it is the same Greek word throughout. And probably it makes it easier to understand if you think of creation in each of those places. I'll read you those four verses just to see if you can get the flavor of them. For the earnest expectation of the creation waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God. For the creation was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who hath subjected the same in hope. Because the creation itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. And not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body. So we're all going to be glorified together, verse 17. So Paul deduces from that the sufferings of this present world are nothing to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. And he deduces from that there's an earnest expectation in creation. Now, bear in mind that creation is inanimate. It can't say anything, but it's a wonderful picture either of what the Lord himself has done for it, or of the wonderful picture that if it could speak, this is what it would say. Because the earnest expectation of creation waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God. So this fallen world doesn't want to remain fallen. Believers don't want to remain fallen. And the world eagerly longs to share in the glory that shall be. And then Paul goes on in verse 20, for the creature was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who has subjected the same in hope. Let me read to you from Genesis 3. So familiar. Genesis 3 verse 17. Unto Adam God said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground. These are the key things. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. So creation was made subject to this curse, because the Lord not only cursed Adam and Eve, but cursed the ground. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. Thorns and thistles shall it bring forth. And they stand for the total alteration of the earth, so that nature is red in tooth and claw. The wild creatures prey on one another. The cats stalk birds, though they have no intention of eating them. Thorns and thistles stands for all that, and is what is referred to, that the creation is subject to vanity, not willingly. Wasn't their fault, was Adam and Eve's fault. And they didn't ask for this particular suffering, that the earth should be cursed. But the Lord gave it to them, because he subjected the same. In other words, he's brought the earth into subjection so that man can continue in subjection, so that man can continue in a cursed state. But there's hope for man, because the gospel was preached there. And there is hope also for the creation. Verse 21, because the creation itself shall also be delivered from the bondage of corruption. That corruption which the Lord inaugurated at Eden. And it shall be delivered into the glorious liberty of the children of God. Who comes first? Well, the children of God. They will be delivered. They will be saved. They will be manifested. And the world will be released from its curse. And it, so to speak, looks forward, longs for that day. For we know, verse 22, that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. The whole of nature, the whole of way that it is constructed, with animal preying upon animal and insects being prey for birds, the whole thing. The whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. But not only they, but ourselves. And ourselves as believers who have been saved. Ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves, grown within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body. We'll be adopted into heaven, our bodies will be changed, they will be redeemed. Now, I wanted you to have all this, because it speaks of our final state, the final state of nature. And though we groan within ourselves now, that isn't how we're going to be. We're going to be manifested. We're going to be delivered. We're going to see the Lord. But currently, though we are saved, though we're living on this earth as saved people, the earth is still cursed around us, and we still groan, waiting for the redemption of our body. Now, chapters 34 and 35 of Isaiah both refer us to the final state, the Lord's return, and what will happen in chapter 34, and the future glory in chapter 35. But in each of these chapters, we have the concession that the description could be as much of the current state as of the final state. Just as we are saved now, and we shall be saved and be in a final state later to come, so both these conditions are described in Isaiah 34 and 35. The final state we shall be, and one or two of the things that will happen en route. So I wanted to put that for you into context. We know that it speaks in chapter 34 of the final state, because we're told in verse 4, all the host of heaven shall be dissolved. And that will be the final state beginning. And we're also told in chapter 35 that there will be no more, no beast shall go up thereon in God's holy mountain. That does now among God's redeemed people, but it won't then. So we know that the ultimate picture of these two chapters is of the return of the Lord and the glory which that return institutes. Now I'll try and go through as quickly as I can, and because there's 27 verses to do. And come near ye nations to hear, and hearken ye people, let the earth hear, and all that is therein, the world and all that come forth of it. This matter is global. This matter is cataclysmic. All the world must listen. Not just Christians, but atheists. Not just Christians, but Muslims. Not just Christians, but animists. All people will be affected and drawn into this whole situation. For the indignation of the Lord is upon all nations. Now, we haven't seen that indignation visited yet in any final way. We've seen pandemics, and there have been plagues in time past. There have been the ravages of terrible wars, particularly in the 20th century. The indignation has begun. The Antichrist has already begun. But this final indignation that will bring about the dissolving of the host of heaven hasn't yet come. The indignation of the Lord is upon all nations, and his fury upon their armies. He hath utterly destroyed them. He hath delivered them to the slaughter. Their slain also shall be cast out, and their stink shall come up out of their carcasses, and all the host of heaven shall be destroyed. Now, I want you to have a look at some verses in the book of Revelation to see how that book concerning the final things picks up these themes. Now, I counted 26 mentions of Revelation in chapter 34, and another 12, some of them the same, but another 12 in verse 35. And I wanted you just to see one or two of these. I can't give you them all, there isn't time. But if you look at chapter 6 and in verse 12 as a beginning, Revelation 6 and verse 12. And I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood, and the stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind, and the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were removed out of their places. And Revelation 14. And verse 14. Revelation 14, 14. And I looked, and behold, a white cloud. And upon the cloud one sat, like unto the Son of Man, having on his head a golden crown, and in his hand a sharp sickle. And another angel came out of the temple, crying with a loud voice to him that sat on the cloud, thrust in thy sickle and reap, for the time is come for thee to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe. And then in chapter 17, 14, where you have the whole picture of Babylon and the woman, the whore, but you get in 17:14, they make war with the Lamb, and they are destroyed. Peoples, nations, tongues, and multitudes. And they're gathered to battle in chapter 16, which we shall also see, verses 14 and 16. They are the spirits of devils working miracles, which go forth unto the kings of the world, of the earth, and of the whole world, to gather them to the battle of that great day, more of that later, of God Almighty. And he gathered them into a place called, in the Hebrew tongue, Armageddon. They war with the Lord. And then in chapter 19, verses 19 to 21. Or verse 17. I saw an angel crying in the sun, Revelation 19, 17. He cried with a loud voice, saying to all the fowls that fly in the midst of heaven, come and gather yourselves together unto the supper of the great God, that ye may eat the flesh of kings, and the flesh of captains, and the flesh of mighty men, and the flesh of horses, and of them that sit on them, and the flesh of all men, both free and bond, both small and great. And they will gather over the whole earth. And the passage of the scroll comes up again. Now, if we look back at chapter 34 of Isaiah, I want you to see how some of these themes have occurred in what we've read in Revelation. And doubtless you will recognize others that also occur in the book of Revelation. Verse 3, their slain shall be cast out. Well, the birds shall be gathered to the bodies, and the bodies shall be lying there unburied, you remember, in Revelation. And all the birds of the air are called to that feast at Armageddon. Their slain shall be cast out, and their stink shall come up out of their carcasses. And the mountains shall be melted with their that isn't mentioned, it's a very powerful picture. All the host of heaven shall be dissolved. Well, you spotted that in Isaiah, in Revelation. And the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, and all their hosts shall fall down, as the leaf falleth off from the vine, and as a falling fig from the fig tree. Now that's in Revelation, the New Testament interprets the Old, and Isaiah is prophesying 700 odd years before Christ, the things that will happen at Christ's return, many thousands of years, 2,000, at least 700 years after the time of his writing. And then verse 5, my sword shall be bathed in heaven. Well, we've seen how his sword and also his sickle is to ripen. And in verse 5, it shall come down upon Idumea and the people of my curse to judge. Now, Idumea was in Edom, the principal town of Edom. Now, Edom means red, and that's the descendants of Esau. And historically, they were always the opponents from the time of the Exodus of the Lord's people. And so the sword of the love, it mentions Idumea, but it only mentions Idumea as an example. It would be like talking about the return of the Lord when the whole earth is going to be destroyed, and we were to say, now, Russia, because of what's going on now, the doom is for you. But it doesn't mean the doom isn't for everybody else, do you see? So, the sword shall come down upon Idumea and upon the people of my curse to judgment. That almost certainly refers to the curse that the Lord has laid upon the Edomites because they refused access into the promised land. But nevertheless, all mankind is the people of God's curse, as we saw in the Garden of Eden. The sword of the Lord is filled with blood. It is made fat with fatness, and the blood of lambs and goats. The Lord has a sacrifice in Bozrah, and that's a town in Idumea, and a great slaughter in the land of Idumea. And if there, and we're talking about global, how bad will it be the world over? And the unicorns, even Gil thinks this is a rhinoceros because it's the only thing he could think of with one horn. There were fabulous creatures in Greek and Roman legends, but in reality, the unicorn would seem to be a rhinoceros. But the meaning is that even the most powerful of animals, as Job said, they're in the Lord's hand. He can do whatever he will. Never mind their power. They shall all be brought down with the people who are to be destroyed. Verse 8, for it is the day of the Lord's vengeance and the year of recompenses for the controversy of Zion. Here a new idea is introduced. It is the day of vengeance when the Lord shall return and when he shall deal with the sins of all his enemies. But most particularly will he have in mind what the world has put the church through, particularly the whore, particularly Babylon and all these things. It is the year of recompense for the recovery of the controversy of Zion. We who have suffered so much, we who have been through so much, the martyrs who have been through so much, it will all be made up to us. It will all be made up to them. The destruction of the world, the unregenerate world, the cruel world, the world that opposes Christ, is precisely because of their antipathy to Zion and therefore to the Lord's people, to the Lord himself. And the streams thereof shall be turned into pitch and the dust thereof into brimstone, as Sodom and Gomorrah. But this seems now to have moved to the position of the lake of fire, that here is an introduction to the concept of the lake of fire. It only refers to the land, not a lake, except it refers to streams, and it shall not be quenched night and day. And now, one of the reasons I mentioned to you that some of the things in these chapters are for the time being and some for the future end of things, here is something. Hell is already a place, as it was for the Dives in the story of Dives and Lazarus. He was tormented in this flame there and then. There were the streams of pitch. There was the sulfur. There was the brimstone then. But it's nothing to what it's going to be like. It's eternal now for those who die and pass away now, but it will be eternal for the times that are to come after the Lord's return. And that's how you must look at the words in verse 10. It shall not be quenched night nor day. Whether it's in the remainder of the time that we are here, or whether it is referring to the time when it will not be visited by the Lord, it shall be hell. It shall not be quenched night nor day. The smoke thereof shall go up forever. From generation to generation, it shall lie waste. None shall pass through it forever and ever. Well, nobody will ever come out of it, whoever goes into it. No one will ever pass through it forever and ever. Go there, and that's where a person stays. And now we have an earthly description, if you like. If the earth is brought to such a wilderness, the cormorant and the bittern and the raven will love that sort of place. And thorns and nettles and brambles will be there. Serpents and owls and beasts of the desert shall be there. The satyr is a goat. And all these things shall be there. All the wild things shall take over where there is no longer any tilling of the ground, where people are ceasing to be there because they've been removed by war. And this is particularly a picture of the state in the meantime. We know that there are things that will happen. The lame shall leap as an hart when Christ comes. That's gospel days. The tongue of the dumb shall sing. But these thorns coming up and nettles and brambles, even while the believers are there, it suggests that there is also talk of the state of the earth in unbelief. And the reason I wanted you to think of the book of Revelation is what follows in verse 16. Out the book of the Lord. Now the writers, the translator's letter to the reader in Latin quotes these words, and it says, seek and read. Tolle lege. Never mind. Seek ye out the book of the Lord and read. Now, different commentators, including the Jewish ones down the years, have looked at a different view of it. Some say the book you're to see is the book of the law. And then you'll discover all these things threatened. Some say it is the book of the Lord's decrees. Well, we can't read the book of the decrees. We can only read the things that are coming to pass. But they do bear these things out. But it seems to me that this is prophetic. It refers to the generation that will see these very things happening and will do just what we did quickly. We'll read the book of Revelation and see all these things foretold and see all these things coming to pass. So this is a word for that generation. Seek ye out the book of the Lord and read. You'll discover that no one of these shall fail. None shall want her mate. Could refer to the birds, but it could refer to the corresponding destruction that the sword of the Lord will bring as one example of a correspondence wanting its mate. For my mouth has commanded, and the spirit of the Lord has gathered them. It's interesting, isn't it? Do you remember the gatherings? Do you remember how, by a secret impulse of the Lord, all the animals, or a selection of them, all of them, some from all of them, were gathered to Adam so that he could name them? And do you remember also how, by a secret impulse, the animals were brought to Noah by twos or by sevens? And this verse is referring now to when the birds come to feed on the flesh of all the slain, it will be the secret impulse of the Lord, his spirit that gathers them. He's cast the lot for them. His hand has divided it unto them by lot. They shall possess it forever. From generation to generation shall they dwell therein. So long as there are people on earth who are not believers, this sort of experience will be beginning. But there will be that final Armageddon. And while on the one hand, chapter 34 speaks of the things that just are at the time of the Lord returns, this terrible time of destruction, chapter 35 speaks of the times, gospel times, but most particularly of the final times of blessing in glory. Now the wilderness and the solitary place should be glad for them, and the desert should rejoice and blossom as the robe. Some commentators think that the wilderness and the solitary place are so glad to see justice done on the evil one that they don't mind it being such a wilderness because it's the place where all evil is to be destroyed. It seems more likely to me that the wilderness and the solitary place will rejoice because it ceased. And they'll be rejoicing because believers will be walking in the way of the Lord. And though we talk of a wilderness experience, that here we are in this world walking through the wilderness with pilgrims on this earth and going to glory, it's not actually a wilderness except in certain parts. So the wilderness in places blossoms as a rose and rejoices at the effect of the gospel upon mankind. Wherever the gospel comes, it blossoms abundantly and enables the waste places of the earth to rejoice with joy and singing, whether it's Lebanon, whether it's Carmel, whether it's Sharon. They will see the glory of the Lord and the excellency of our God. Particularly think at this stage of the chapter of gospel days. And then the prophet has a word from the Lord for them. This seems to be the prophet speaking. Strengthen ye the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees. So if we're scared to fight, scared to work, don't like to pray, can't bend over, the Lord says now, strengthen your faith. Look to the Lord for a reversal of those natural failings that come to us with age. Strengthen ye the weak hands. Your hands are weak. Well, strengthen them and the Lord will add his blessing as you do it. Confirm the feeble knees. Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong. Fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even God with a recompense. He will come and save you. Well, we saw that this is the year of recompense, the final time for the controversy of Zion. But the church is not to fear. The church is not to give up. The Lord's people are to be strong because our God is coming. And he's going to have vengeance on every evil thing, every evil way. We're not to take vengeance. We're not to think vengeance in our hearts. Vengeance belongs to the Lord, not to us. God will come with his recompense. He will come and save you. Now you remember that we read in Romans 8 that we're waiting, groaning within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body. And this is the salvation that seems to be spoken of here. He will come and save you. He's talking to save people anyway. It's the redemption of their body. It's that he will return and that we should be changed that I think is particularly spoken of here. And then this wonderful description of gospel days, but also of the final glory. Then, that's when it happens, gospel days, the eyes of the blind shall be open. But then in glory, they'll always be open. Their blindness will be forgotten. The ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. They'll hear the gospel. They'll believe. They'll cease to be literally deaf. But in heaven, They will never revert. There will never be that sort of problem again. They will hear the voice of God and they will see him. The lame man shall leap as a hart, as the man did at the beautiful gate of the temple. And the tongue of the dumb shall sing. But so they will in glory. So these things shall be fulfilled. And those of us who were dumb shall be stunned, shall be singing, worthy is the Lamb that was slain. Waters shall break out and streams in the desert. Well, you remember Revelation 22, 21, streams coming from the throne of God. These wonderful streams coming from the throne of God. And twice in chapter 22, the Lord speaks of streams. And the parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water. Yes, where the gospel goes, the earth is transformed. But here is a picture of the new heaven and the new earth, where the parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water. In the habitation of serpents, dragons, where each lay, shall be grass with reeds and rushes. This whole picture that the earth shall be restored, that a child shall play on the hole of an asp, that we needn't be afraid anywhere in the Lord's kingdom. This picture of the renewal of the earth, the new earth and the new heaven. And a highway shall be there, all right? Through the gospel, there is a way of holiness. It's only open to those who believe. It's only open to those whose sins have been put away. The unclean shall not pass over it. It shall be for wayfaring men, pilgrims. Well, glory will be unalloyed holiness. It shall still be true that they, not the way of holiness so much as the place of holiness, the glory of holiness. And there'll be no unclean there, as the last two chapters of Revelation say. Be no unclean, no murderer, no adulterer, no anything shall be there. And then this wonderful word about the simplicity of the gospel. Wayfaring men, though fools, shall not err therein. Vagabonds, without education, either in learning or in morals. But they shall not fail to understand the preaching of the gospel. You may think, for example, of the lowest of the lower castes in India. Workers in the brick kiln. Got nothing to hope for in this world. But we preach the gospel to them. And they give them scriptures and they teach them to read. And it is that wayfaring men, though fools, in the gospel, make no mistake in understanding its glorious truth. No lion shall be there, nor any ravenous beast go up thereon. Now, we're not there yet. There are still lions in the world. There are still ravenous beasts in the world in which we as believers live. But in the final state, the new earth, together with the new heaven, there shall be no such thing. No lion shall be there, nor any ravenous beast shall go up there. It shall not be found there, but it will be peopled with the redeemed. The redeemed shall walk there. And without any worry about being attacked, without any worry of wild beasts, without any worry of sin, but only of holiness, the ransomed of the Lord shall return. They'll return to their original home. Remember the story of the prodigal son. He left home. Our home was in the heart of God when he elected us. But we shall return. We shall return to the Lord. We shall see the Saviour face to face. To be a place of unalloyed joy and no sin whatever. The ransomed of the Lord shall return and shall come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. What a wonderful thing it will be when the whole of the creation shall see the manifestation of the sons of God and when the Lord's people themselves shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness. What I think that means is there'll be joy and gladness added to them way beyond anything they can ever imagine. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. These are wonderful terms worth memorizing, verse 10 of chapter 35. I wanted you just tonight, really just simply to have a vision of the things that are yet to come in the middle of all these dark days. Creation's going to be changed. We're going to be changed. There will be terrible things at the time of the Lord's return upon the unregenerate earth. And there'll be wonderful things for the believer. We must strengthen our hands, strengthen the feeble knees. We must rejoice because the Lord will come and deliver us and save us from all our enemies. Amen.